Hi, Dr. Bill here.
Hi, Dr. Bill. How are you?
Good. Considering everything? Always try to have an optimistic attitude toward whatever we're dealing with.
We match that. Dr. Bill, it's Bill Ryan here. How are you doing? Good to speak to you.
Good, good. I can pick up the phone, too, so you'll get a little better sound. So, yeah, how are you doing today in your worldwide travels?
Well, at the moment, I'm feeling uncomfortably close to the Ukraine, and we're very interested to know what news you might have for us here.
Well, I can rearrange my list of topics here because I have four.
Okay, before you do that, let me do an introduction so have that on the record here. So what we have is it's Sunday, November 15th, 2009, and this is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan from Project Camelot. We're on the air here with Dr. Bill Deagle, and we're going to be doing an update. And there's so much happening, and I know, Bill, that you have a lot of areas to cover that you've outlined, specifically three different areas. And so I'd be glad to hear you go through each one of those.
Yes, I think I'll start off with the H1N1. And I know there's a little confusion because sometimes people will even call either after my radio show on Genesis. They don't understand the difference between the Mexican flu and the Ukrainian flu, and they're making confusion thinking that the flu that's going on in Ukraine is different. It is. It's probably genetically changed, but it's still an H1N1 flu in 99.9% probability. What happened is that the powers that be, I call it the PTB, decided some years ago that there were too much population on the planet. That goes way back to Malthus, etc. And they knew at some point that science was going to cross the Rubicon and human lifespan was going to extend dramatically. And they decided back in the 1970s, with reports like the NSM report and the reports since then up to Global 2000, that one of the primary concerns they had was not the proliferation of nuclear weapons, but the population growth, which, to be honest with you, is fallacious because at the rate we're going, we're going to start seeing population reduction within about 12 years worldwide. For a number of reasons, decreased fertility, increased pollution, just the fact that populations, when they get in an advanced culture, they don't just reproduce, they do other things with their life. You know, if they live to be 100 or 120, they're productive citizens, and the idea would be to keep people productive longer. One of the biggest problems in our civilization is we don't honor the elderly, and the elderly don't stay as healthy as they used to. In countries like Japan, the elderly are considered like a national monument. And in China and other civilizations, the wisdom of the elderly is considered essential to the survival of the civilization. Because I belong to the Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, I'm also privy to technologies that are here or are coming very soon. And to give an example of some of the things that are here now, we have the capacity right now through laboratories in Atlanta and Florida. We can draw your bloods. We can also do this in a lab affiliated with Dr. David Steinblock down in Tijuana, Mexico. We can draw your blood, multiply your stem cells billions of times, bank them for, if necessary, centuries, and give them back to you with growth factors that can convert them in your own body to brain cells, nerve cells, muscle cells, and we can do this today. So we're only probably a couple of years away from being able to grow whole organ systems and not only slow aging, but reverse it. So the globalists know this, and it's, in fact, it actually could probably be done for relatively minimal cost because it's not really expensive to do a lot of these things. So in a sense, because they've got this modus that most of the globalists believe they are the keepers of civilization, the thing that they consider the greatest threat is population. So when I traveled 12 and a half years ago to Zurich, Switzerland, to talk about the fetal tissue transplant research and the super soldier program, which I have classified access to information because they tried to recruit me to the project that was going on at the VA hospital in UCLA in 1977, and since then, many different contacts, that people don't understand there's been hundreds of trillions of dollars spent on weird classified projects and inducting brilliant people, they're very creative, over many, many decades from all over the world to go into these projects. So they've made incredible progress. Some of the things they've done are purely devilish and concerning. Others are ones that can transform health and get people that are sick or have brain injury and other things, a spinal cord injury, and make major inroads to literally reduce the cost of health care and reverse a lot of the suffering. But unfortunately, they have other plans. And after I did my talk, they gave me documents about the Special Virus Project, about the plasmid vaccine. That was the one to create the AIDS virus that the World Health Organization, the United Nations, sponsored with the Rothschild help. The plasmid HCG vaccine to create antibodies to stop first trimester pregnancy. And the most concerning of all, of course, was the third project, is the resurrection of the 1918 swine flu. And to make a binary weapon that would involve avian as well as swine. And they've actually done it in stages where the avian flu emerged in 1997 with new genetics from the 1971 gene analysis at the University of Edinburgh World Health Organization Reference Lab. And they have now released, earlier this year, the swine flu. I call it swine 11 because it has the capacity to spread much faster than regular flu, although the first phase of it is called a herald phase. It was very mild, although it would hit atypically certain individuals. It's only been since late summer and early fall where it's starting to kill people that are otherwise extremely healthy and don't have high body mass index or other risk factors that would put them at high risk. The globalist intention is to primarily put in a control matrix over the entire planet first, rather than to reduce the population, at least in the first phases, because they don't want us to interfere with their survival for what they see as coming. And what they see as coming is a number of Earth changes and the transformation of technologies that literally could allow a select group of the population to live virtually biologically unlimited lives, and to travel to the stars and interact with advanced civilizations.
Bill, what you're saying is they have an agenda. They know that we've made a lot of progress and that more population could live longer. And in essence, they've decided to roll out this flu, as well as making the vaccine itself.
Both of them have an agenda. Both of them are bad. But the documents I got showed exactly how they're going to do it. In fact, they followed literally to the letter how they're going to do it, using the Oracle AI supercomputer software, taking gene fragments and rebuilding the virus de novo, and rolled us out.
Have you seen a recent article from the UK, I believe it's The Sun, talking about the fact that they have been testing the swine flu in Ukraine, and that they're now finding that it is a recombinant. It's mutated into what they call a single pneumonic plague.
What that means. I'll tell you what, the World Health Organization was withholding data. What I have so far is suggesting that some of the data that's come out suggests that what's called the D225, which is the amino acid in the receptor binding domain, has changed in two amino acid positions, at least, that are similar to the one in South Korea earlier this year and into Sao Paulo, Brazil, which are in clusters that were more lethal. What they're not releasing are the genes that are probably pretty significant that came out in research papers by Dr. Tumpe. His paper published in October just last month, and that indicated, it's called the resurrection of the 1918 flu, and they actually did resurrect it and rebuild the virus in different gene, what they call biosimilars, which means that certain genes were missing so that they could study which genes were the lethal parts or cause certain types of biological action. They haven't published the information about about the whole genome, so we don't know if there's one or more subtypes, or we call clades, C-L-A-D-E-S, clades of the virus. But it's obvious to me from what I can see that several things could have happened. And rather than jumping to what I call the conspiracy theory, the first is Ukraine has the most open market for antivirals in the world. And they've had a drug called Arbidol that's been developed by the Russians 30 years ago. They have other drugs that they can get relatively cheaply, including Tamiflu, Relenza, etc. And when you take viruses and you expose them to these drugs, it's the same as when you overuse antibiotics. The virus, you prevent the Wally viruses from infecting people, so only the ones that are resistant to those drugs become the ambient viruses, and now the virus's evolution is pushed forward quickly. They discovered this in China in 97, and when they start getting it infected in their chicken populations in the giant chicken farms in China, factory farms. And so they had to basically totally wall off the farm so that there was no interaction with the outside at all. Otherwise, they found every other measure, including giving high-dose amantadine and vaccinations. All of it did was speed the evolution of the virus. So the virus mutated to become totally resistant to amantadine and anything else they tried. So it's been estimated by experts that if you give high amounts of Tamiflu to a population, it'll only be about 4 days before to 12 days before emergent strains that are resistant to Tamiflu arise. And when those emergent strains arise, they also can have other genetic changes that can make them more lethal. This virus grows 10,000 to 100,000 times more in the lungs, causes extremely high temperature, can grow in the brain, can cause a cytokine storm, which can cause the lungs to literally liquefy after they hit the temperature of 135 to 140 degrees by denaturing the proteins of the lung tissue. So the virus is the second level now. There's evident, this is not a theory or whatever, that the virus has changed. It is an H1N1, but it's either acquired spontaneously by recombining with other viruses, which could be typical flu out there, or the remote possibility it's picked up genes from H5N1, which is in the bird population and other wild animals. But because of the firewall, it doesn't have the receptor binding domain, so it can't attach to humans. Well, this virus, the H1N1, attaches to humans at roughly three times the rate of even normal flu, so it spreads much more rapidly, but it has been relatively mild in terms of total number of case fatalities, although in the people that are getting it lately, they're relatively athletic and young, and they're dying of a cytokine storm, which is very similar to 1918. So the second wave of the plague is on.
Why do you think that they're concentrating, at least on Ukraine? We have a whistleblower has suggested that their target at the Ukraine was because Russia was not playing the game that the Illuminati wanted them to play.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Russia has done a couple things that have ticked them off. The first is that they were negotiating back and forth with Saudi Arabia and the Arab states over trying to pull a dollar from the oil standard. The real standard in the world isn't gold. It's even not even the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is a proxy. The real standard in the world is oil, denominated in U.S. dollars, which is part of the Aramco deal with Saudi Arabia and the oil states. And gold and everything else is just basically commoditized against it. And what they wanted to do is move to a special drawing right, which is a basket of currencies. But 63% of the world currency reserves in U.S. dollars. So as much as people are saying we're moving into a depression, and I know you've had experts talking about that, we're not moving to a typical depression. We're moving to the matrix. We're moving to literally a trackable RFID system where all cash is virtual, in a supercomputer mainframe array system with subarrays and supercomputers distributed all over the world, where every transaction, every action, every purchase, every movement from one city or state or country is tracked. And of course, when you have a pandemic, nothing would make it much more easy to chip and track the entire population of Earth, which is ultimately their goal. And nothing else would do it. Even a regular depression wouldn't do it. A nuclear war wouldn't do it. A major terrorist activity blowing up cities wouldn't do it. The only thing it'll do is an airborne plague.
So, in essence, are you saying that with the second, you know, with what's going on with the Ukraine and this second sort of rollout of the virus, do you believe that this is going to be, in essence, their end game? In other words, this is the virus they will roll out around the world.
Well, it's one of the versions. It may be upgraded over a period of years. It's not like it's going to all happen in one shot. This could hit and spread around the world over the next, say, 6 to 18 months and kill, say, 100 or 300 million people. But it may not be the only wave. And the virus will have the capacity to transfer its genes to other flu viruses, pick up on new genetics, and kind of go in a wave, just like the 1918 flu, and come back in another wave 6 or 10 months or a year later. The Asian flu of 1957 kept coming back in waves until 1968, so it came over 11 years. This virus here has some unusual characteristics. It's rod-shaped and not spherical. It grows in the lung tissue. It's picking up genes where it has capacity in some people to grow in their lungs. It has a spreading capacity that's really enormous, and it's got some defects in its PA gene, which means it reproduces or replicates the virus incorrectly. It's like a photocopier that works really fast, but it makes bad copies. So it has a capacity to make new, if you want to call it, mutants of the virus. Because it spreads so quickly, it's also embedded itself in the human population, and as the humans interact with animals or birds, the chances of an eventual recombination with H5N1 is really, really high in the next, say, 2 years. So we can go from, say, right now we're calculating 0.65% case fatality rate. It could easily jump to 20 or 30%. At its current rate, if it spreads across Europe to North America, it's probably sufficient for the government to declare medical martial law and lock down the international travel and transport. So that is very probable between now and January. That'll happen. They may be premature at that rate. And in fact, they should have already been preventing travel from Eastern Europe. If I was in control, I would have people that fly in from there basically quarantine in a nice kind of hospital environment where you monitor them for a week, make sure they don't get sick, and you do PCR tests because a conventional thermal scan or the Z-Stat flu test, the quick test that the FDA put together, is totally useless, and they know it. They never tested it for efficacy. It's no different than the Z-Stat flu test, which I had in my office in Denver, which is pretty poor at best for regular influenza A, but for the H1N1, they know it's useless. So their statistics that they put together are a total sham, the CDC and the FDA, because they basically said anybody that's in hospital, we tested them, they're H1N1, so don't even go test in the community. So they're making assumptions. Problem is that they're also not publishing data on the viral evolution, because it's going to acquire genes from other flu or from H5N1, because it's in all the bird populations on all continents on the planet except for Antarctica. So the end game is, let's say between now and 2012, the next 2 years and a bit, they want to lock down the planet and have everybody chipped. And this plague and its future children and grandchildren will be the vehicle by which that will be accomplished. That's what they're trying to do.
The vaccine, we understand, helps to spread this.
Well, it does it in several ways. The vaccine, because of its adjuvants, and we went over this with Desiree Rover, who lives in Netherlands, and she has her own radio show, Desiree Rovers. And they had three different vaccines. All three of them have 40 times the concentration of squalene as the anthrax vaccine released by Bioport, which is the one that causes Gulf War syndrome. 40 times. So the Pandemrix has 10.69 milligrams per dose of that, and it also has aluminum hydroxide, which we reviewed with Dr. Chris Shaw, who's been on the program a number of times. University of British Columbia neurobiologist, head professor in the Department of Ophthalmology, University of British Columbia, and he's done animal studies on both mice exposed to aluminum hydroxide, equidose levels of aluminum hydroxide separately, squalene, or the combination, and looked at their brains and other organs. And it causes neurological and genotoxic and sterilization effects. So I'm getting reports every day of women spontaneously miscarrying. We're seeing all kinds of reports. And we've tracked the spay and neuter vaccine was licensed in Europe a year ago. It has the identical components to these vaccines that will sterilize the population. A lot of people are going to be basically, even if they don't have any immediate neurological effects, they may become significantly less fertile. Because it has oogenesis effects on the eggs, and very spermicidal. It destroys sperm development, which is the most rapidly growing cell in the male.
Okay, I want to move on to the other topics that we've got here, because I want to make sure that we are able to cover everything.
Just let me summarize in just a minute here. I expect to happen, number one, I have solutions for what could be done to stop it. And here's the quick things that we need to do. All aircraft, number one, coming in from Eastern Europe should immediately be quarantined, and everybody should be going to a facility for 7 days. They could do it nicely, and they don't have to make it with armed guards and violence. And then they just do PCR, and if everybody's clear, they let them enter. Goods are not going to transport it, so containers coming in, that's ridiculous. You don't need to quarantine containers and all that stuff. The virus isn't going to survive. It has to come in a human host, and the human can spread the virus 7 to 10 days before they get sick. Secondly, people should be taking things to build up host defenses and hygiene. We should have NIOSH N95 boxes in every street corner and every rail station everywhere, so if people want one, the government already has them there, you just grab and stick one on your face. You've got a cough or a cold, you reverse protect so you don't cough on anyone else. People should be taking nutraceuticals, which we carry, of course, to try to make sure that you don't allow the virus to attach to your cells and you kill it. If we did that, we'd stop the virus cold. The government's doing nothing to stop international travel of passengers that could carry it from Eastern Europe. They want this to hit the maximum, and I do believe they want to delay it until it really explodes, which is probably somewhere between Thanksgiving and the first of the new year. When they do that, it's going to be parallel to the financial disasters that are happening worldwide, because they say they want to destroy the dollar, but the one who's going to control the world currency in the end is going to be America with our supercomputer array, which is worldwide, and this, they'll move toward this basket of currencies, but it'll all be virtual. And if you want to look at the biblical term, it's called the mark of the beast. They want to have a system where no one has coin in your pocket or even cash paper in your wallet. Everything is electronic divots in a computer system. Every transaction, action, and every bit of your behavior is in a database. That's ultimately their goal. And, of course, that can lead into the other topics, the 2012 issues.
Well, let me ask you about this G20 meeting that Daniel Estulin reported on, and I'm wondering if you agree with his conclusions, because what is actually being publicized about that is that America and Russia, certain countries were working to actually surprisingly to bring the dollar to zero, whereas supposedly the Illuminati Rothschild contingent decided to halt that for some reason.
It's all part of a game. Let me tell you what they want. If I was the president of the United States tomorrow, I'd probably want to devalue the dollar slowly, because the balance of trades is killing us, because the renminbi and these Asian currencies are too valuable, are too cheap, in other words, versus how much they're manufacturing. So all our manufacturing is going there. So our balance is basically against China and the Asian countries. What they really want to do is they want to re-jockey the world currencies. And when they do that, they need to have this dialectic for external consumption, where the Rothschilds are saying one thing, they're putting one hat on, the other guy's putting a different hat on. Ultimately, what they're moving to is a virtual currency that's a world currency tied directly to the cap and trade, the global green currency, and eco-communism, I call it. And they may tell you otherwise, but America's not going away, and America's not going into a depression. In fact, America will emerge from this, and so will China, richer and more powerful. And so will Russia. The other second world countries will do moderately better, and the third world countries will do pretty bad, actually. Because with a cap and trade, we will purchase their carbon credits, and they will starve in the dark. And that's what the ultimate agenda is, because their agenda is to starve out the third world countries and have the first and second world utilize their resources. So although this jockeying is occurring on externally, from you see these two different dialectics, the real issue with the G20 is they're moving us in the next 2 years, roughly, toward a world global electronic currency and a whole new global economic order, where everybody will, in the first and second world, will be enriched and more powerful, Russia, China, America, etc. Basically, the G20 nations and the third world will be a disaster basket case.
Dr. Bill, I wanted to ask if you were familiar with Lindsay Williams's most recent
report. Yeah, I have. I'm very familiar with what Lindsay Williams talked about.
And what you were suggesting, that the U.S. was going to emerge stronger from this, seems to be 180 degrees from what he was reporting as the plan for the next 2 years. And I wondered if you could reconcile that somehow.
Well, just think of it logically, and you can kind of, as I say, it's just like our relativistic physics. If you had a total collapse of the economy, you move back within a matter of days or weeks to the city-states. You no longer have a new world order. You have 2,000 city-states around the planet, and you don't have a new world order at all. So what Lindsay Williams is talking about is totally unrealistic and isn't going to happen. It's not possible to happen. Okay, and the reason why it's not possible is because the people that are in total control of all the chips on the table of both sides of the dialectic, or multi-level dialectics, are the globalists. So they may put one hat on and say they're going to do this, and one hat on and say they're going to do that. And then you're thankful that in the meantime, you've got a much higher level of unemployment. You've got most of the people who've lost their equity in their homes. You've got, you know, maybe more America embroiled in yet another war in Afghanistan, but it's not a third world war. You can still go to the movies, and there's still not chaos. And you continue to believe the story that there's going to be change and everybody's going to move forward. And we've got national health care, even though it's not really very good. It's kind of like a poorly run repair shop. So, firstly, I think that his information, his intel, is probably correct in terms of what he received. I don't doubt that he didn't receive this information. and that there may be a segment that says that they're going to pull down the American economy. You can't do that. Without America, there is no New World Order. This idea that China was going to be the engine of the world economy is pure foolishness. Just travel to China, and you'll see all these fancy new shopping centers that they've been building because they've been consuming 80% of the world's concrete are being boarded up, and the stores are empty, and people aren't spending money because the Chinese are smart with their money, and they realize that the world economy is going down the toilet. And they're an export economy. That's why in China, rather than sending all the people back from the factories, they're piling up all this material they can't ship to Walmart and all the distributors in America, because the same way as in Germany, the cars are piling up on the docks from Mercedes-Benz and all these other car manufacturers in Seoul, South Korea, etc. So, yeah, we're headed for very hard times, but we're not headed for what they say. We're headed not for a depression. We're headed for the mark of the beast. We're headed for a global world economy where the first and second world reconsolidate their power and the third world becomes destroyed.
That's a really interesting take on the situation. It sounds actually like, to me, it sounds logical.
Yeah, it makes sense. You'll see that if you collapsed America, America's the policeman of the world. No country can forward a force. What they really want to do eventually, and this is their ultimate plan, which is not only the CFR and the Royal Institute for International Studies to join America and Britain and, of course, the alliance with Europe. But the ultimate alliance is to ally the world powers into one global force, which means a global force integrating America and China and Russia as a global eco-police and the global world police as a world armed forces. Now, people find that hard to believe, but the fact is war is obsolete, but they have to maintain an enemy. So they've created this false enemy of Islam, and they've supported the Wahhabist school so they can demonize everyone to go after the Islamic peoples. And, of course, what that does is it creates a situation where people have to have an enemy to build up an armed forces. But their ultimate goal isn't. They know that anybody starts an asymmetric war on this planet, no one's going to survive. You know, all these other countries, including Iran, have advanced fuel air bombs, biological weapons, and others. So, and they have alliances with Russia and China. So the idea that we're going to go in a big thermonuclear fireball, it would only happen by accident. And the area that's most likely is where there's a very narrow window of verification that there's incoming, and that's between India and Pakistan. Iran cannot counterbalance Israel, so that's not going to happen. But India and Pakistan could have a local nuclear war because they only have a two-minute warning to verify whether or not something is a real threat or it's a pseudo-threat. Basically, that's what I see going on there. So I think he thinks that America will not even have the money to revolt, and all this stuff is complete foolishness. Firstly, if the states go bankrupt in the next year, what will happen is the states will secede from the Union, starting with Texas, and they'll do it probably within a matter of 6 months to a year, if that eventuality happens. And they simply reform the Republic of America. And in most likelihood, they'd annex Canada, and Canada would become, in a sense, the new United States of America, Canada versions. So I see America expanding one way or the other. I don't see it disappearing. And I see its power increasing, not decreasing.
Okay, and Bill, when you say you see it, are you getting intelligence to this effect?
I'm getting intelligence, and I'm getting advanced information, which I'll tell you about in a while, that tells me that the engine that's driving the world toward this timeline is not Russia, it's not China, it's not Japan, it's America. America is the chief, if you want to call it, leader nation on the planet, and there's not going to be a peaceful future, a future for mankind, unless America does a proper leadership role on this planet. And if there's no America and it's wiped out financially and otherwise doesn't exist, mankind's not going to survive.
Can you address what you talked to me about the other day, which is what the move that China made on gold?
Yeah, well, what happened is China made this move on gold, which was reported by Steve Quayle, and I've got some other corroboration that in the spring when Hillary Clinton went over, and since then Geithner has gone over several times, that they gave guarantees that they're going to support the U.S. dollar because the Chinese want to basically, they don't want to see all their trillions of dollars denominated disappear into nothing. So making this public display to say that they're going to demand gold through the world court is like filing a lawsuit against somebody where you know you can't win. It's basically demanding that America play ball with China on a public stage so that they jockey for their position in the New World Order and they don't get wiped out financially. And that's okay, but that's just for public consumption, because behind the scenes, America and China and Britain, for example, a few years ago, the globalists, including the Carlyle Group and others, basically dictated to the communist Chinese that you've got to put up for sale your largest manufacturing company in China for building these giant cities that they're... So 80% of the world construction is occurring in China right now. And guess who owns the construction companies and the major large equipment manufacturer? It's all the Carlyle Group that's owned by the British royals, George Bush Sr., and the Saudi Arabians. They're the ones that own it all. So it's all integrated. And the Chinese were set up originally by the British, and then Mao Zedong was basically a British operative. So the idea that somehow they're separate, they're just playing part of their game, you know, it's like cops and robbers, so that they can maintain their position in this new order that's going to be developed with Russia and China and America and these other nations jockeying for a position at the trough to be the, right now it's the G20, the top 20 nations that make 75 to 80% of the world's economic output.
We also have a whistleblower that talked about what he calls the Egypt Accords, where the world was divided up into North and South America goes to the United States, Europe goes to Russia, and China gets the Far East. Is that something you're familiar with?
Yeah, the trilateral world, yeah, that makes sense. It's totally logical. Right now, Europe is totally in the grip of Russia, and China does get control of Asia, and they're making deals now with Japan, which you'd never expected 20, 30 years ago, and with the South Koreans, so... I agree. I think that that makes total sense, although among that three zones or three areas, three if you want to call it colors, the blue color being the Western Alliance, North and South America under America, and the red, let's say Russia and Europe, and the yellow being all the Asian countries, those are literally seem like the colors that are read out of the Bible for the resources. And the policies that I saw back in 97 when I traveled to HLI was they wanted to reduce the population in the third world dramatically, just like Henry Kissinger stated, so that they could utilize their resources on into the 21st, 22nd, and subsequent centuries. This new world order system they're trying to set up is to survive Earth changes and to survive with a core population that will plunder the resources and prevent these nations from interfering with the survival of the first and second world.
Okay, well, speaking of Earth changes, you also said you had some correct info that would correct some of the things that Patrick Jarrell had been talking about. And with the movie coming out this weekend, 2012, it'd be an ideal time to talk about that.
Yeah. So, in other words, I think what people should do is, number one, just close up on the economic one. They need to get out of the dollar in a sense of, if they have dollar denominations, to get the silver and gold. Number two, they need to be as low in debt or debt-free as they can, to be, in other words, be mobile and quick. They need to be by country if they can, or by continent, so that if they have to travel because there's disturbances or martial law or whatever, they can, or be able to protect themselves if there's a plague that spreads or political breakdown, because, in fact, the political breakdown may be more serious than the actual airborne plagues, either this or a biological weapon. Talking about the Earth changes, and I looked at the interview from Patrick Jarrell, and I've also listened to the information from Cliff High, and I disagree with both of them. There is evidence, if you look back through the geological record, that there's been electromagnetic pole changes occur every roughly 11,500 to 11,800 years down through history. But there haven't been subsequent species die-offs. In other words, you haven't seen the massive 95% die-off of the species during those 11,500 to 800 years. And yes, there have been physical pole shifts where there's been giant tsunamis that have struck, such as a giant one that was probably thought to hit somewhere probably around 40 to 50,000 years ago that struck the Altiplano Plateau of the Andes Mountains and probably went as high as 11,000 feet. So there's some evidence that it has happened before. But the most common thing is actually what's called a crustal slip, which is not a full pole shift. Right now already we've had a magnetic shift that's already occurred three major shifts since 1997. And if you look at the actual position of the axial pole. Somewhere around 500,000 years ago, the axial pole of the North Pole was actually near Northbury, Ontario, Canada. It's moved a number of times since then, but it shifted maybe 1,000 miles or 800 miles, whatever. It hasn't shifted where the pole is actually flipped or moved so that the whole axis of the Earth has changed. And that's because of the inertial momentum of the continents, which are very massive, as well as the drag of the magma and the structure of the Earth itself. So I saw some of the diagrams that were posted up and some of the information that they're referencing on, and they're expecting that the magnetic flux fields of the Sun are what flips the magnetic field of the Earth, so therefore you get a pole shift. I can say categorically, a pole flip rather than a slip is not going to occur. There's going to be a slip, but it'll be very slow. In fact, the best way to describe it, and this is also in the Hopi prophecies and others, is that if you move the Earth as fast as Gerald talked about, the atmosphere would heat up so much, everything in every life form would be incinerated from the temperature because it would probably rise to about 10,000 degrees. So, number one, that has never occurred. If it happens, it's something that slips because of internal viscosity in the Earth and the magma. And the most likely thing is it's going to move at something like 1.6 miles per hour, which over a period of months would move the pole 1,200 miles. So 1.6 miles an hour is about half as fast as I walk. So that's not very fast, and it's not going to cause any friction. The position also that he mentioned in terms of areas where survival was disturbing, because he can't predict where it's going to go and how far it'll slip. I can tell you from other information I have, which is another story, that in fact there will be Earth changes, and there's a number of maps that have been published by intuitives over the decades. And the position of North America will be moved 1,200 miles south, not north. And that the movement of Russia and Northern Asia are going to move 1,200 miles north, so the pole will actually reside inside the territory of Russia after this event. The primary thing that people need to be concerned about is a solar mass ejection and a collapse of the magnetosphere, which can occur very temporarily. We're talking about partial to complete collapse. It may be partial for days or weeks and complete for maybe hours. And during that time, if you're outside, you'll be irradiated with high-energy ultraviolet light and the danger of exposure to X-rays and cosmic rays. And there is good evidence that there are evolutionary leaps that occur besides the die-off of species that occur, which are not complete. And I've had discussions with Robert Felix about this, and you might want to have him on your program. And also, if you haven't already had him, Larry Joseph, because we're following the issue of the magnetosphere, because it's a giant magnetic hole between the tip of Antarctica on the eastern side of Antarctica and the South Atlantic, all the way to the tip of South Africa, that if you go out into space, NASA just did a major flypast to five satellites and proved it in their own documents, which I have posted up on the site, that there's a giant magnetic sphere hole that...
Does that include part of Ecuador, or is that a different...
No, it's on the... It's basically in South Atlantic, between the tip of South Africa, south of South Africa, all the way to Antarctica, and basically kind of an empty part of the South Pacific.
Okay.
But there's a giant magnetic hole, and that's already there. It's documented. NASA's already put their data up, so it's not even open to dispute. The other thing is there's two areas where there's already been a pole, magnetic pole reversal. There's a North Pole zone in the South Atlantic near Antarctica, and there's a North Pole that slipped to south in the North Atlantic. And what it's also doing is it's allowing high-energy ultraviolet sea light to come through, which can melt ice. So besides the volcanism, which occurs in the, if you want to call it the Earth's radiator, which is about a 23,000-mile-long band in the interoceanic ridge, and in an area called the Gatkal Range, which is about 1,500 miles long in the Arctic, it's a volcanic ridge anywhere from 2.5 to 3 miles down. Some of these volcanic mountains are as tall as the Swiss Alps, and they're venting out quadrillions of BTUs of energy every minute. And it's the primary driver of the world's climate. Besides the sun, is the amount of thermal energy generated at ridges like the one off the Galapagos Islands, 1,000 miles off the coast of the western coast of South America. It's a volcanic ridge under a giant oceanic trench.
It must be connected with El Nino.
Yeah, in fact, it's the cause of El Nino. The El Nino is simply this giant volcanic trench becoming periodically active, and when the oceans heat up, that hot water at the bottom makes the oceans literally flip over, and it drives the air current. So it's completely volcanic, and it's a cyclical thing, and it's tied to the Earth's position magnetic flux fields with the sun, which is an interlocked system, and it's cyclical, just like the Mayans found and so on. So these things have always been there. What's going to happen, though, is, of course, these cycles and the activity of the volcanoes under the oceans are much, much more active now. So the areas where the Ross Ice Shelf is breaking off is where there's increased volcanism under those areas of the shelf, and the areas where it's increasing is where the shelf is not overlying any underlying volcanism.
And of course, there is where
the Atlantic Conveyor, the Atlantic Conveyor is in danger of shutting down, too, because as the oceans melt, some of the ice and the salinity of the conveyor is dropping. During these periods, if there's sufficient melting caused by these events like the volcanism, like at the Gackow Range, you could theoretically shut down the conveyor. So the primary thing that's happening now worldwide, which we've been following now for well over a decade, is increased rainfall all over the planet. If you look at the total planetary rainfall, it's increasing, and that's the primary driver, along with the sulfur dioxide content from volcanoes, that drives us into an ice age. So if you actually look at scientifically the data of what we have, we're heading into, at the very least, the cooling period with a high probability, with all the 11,500-800-year, the 105,000-year, and the longer cycles, all of them are telling us we're converging toward an ice age. So although they'll tell you there's global warming, in fact, the rainfall drives us always toward an ice age, and at the very least, a global cooling period. So
okay, but in the near future, when we're talking about increased volcanism and possibly some input from CMEs from the sun, how are you seeing what's
happening
to the continents?
The sun is actually cooling down overall, but we're likely to have a solar mass ejection. So the sun solar activity is reducing, but the kind of light coming from the sun is changing. And, in other words, the colors.
And what about the move and the energy from the galactic center? How is this affecting the scenario?
Well, as we pass through the galactic center, the primary thing that we're going to be hit there is what's called we hit the gravity wave, because the sun's nuclear reaction is interlocked with the plasma jets that come out of the supermassive black hole in the center of the galaxy. So for every black hole, the white holes reside inside stars. In other words, there is a reemergence of matter that occurs inside stars. And so stars do not just burn up and blow up. They actually have some distribution of mass that literally comes as a plasma jet through the vortices that emerge from the black hole and reemerge. So in a sense, the stars are almost like Christmas lights, and the central cord, if you want to call it, of the tree is the black hole in the center.
Okay, so how's that going to affect the Earth, though, in the near
future? Well, the way it'll affect the Earth is this. The sun is literally cooling off slightly, but it also increases the risk of a solar mass ejection. And they know this, in fact. I have both regular and classified sources that a solar mass ejection is far more likely between now and 2013, and that they, quote, don't expect the grid to survive 2013 for two reasons. The first is increased solar activity of these sunspots and solar mass ejections. The second is the green revolution, because if you put more wind generators and solar panels, they didn't put surge protectors on the grid system, and it won't be able to tolerate the increased load fluctuations caused by putting, say, 20% of the load on the California grid system. And then you've got all these magnetic flux changes occurring that make the Earth much more likely to be hit by an electromagnetic pulse from the bow shock wave of a solar mass ejection or a major sunspot. A big sunspot can do it, too. You don't even have to have a solar mass ejection. That could be enough if it's the right angle to blow a portion of the grid. The problem is they don't have in-time production is the way they deliver everything. So if you lose a lot of major parts of your grid, it could take you months or years to actually put it back together.
The odds on our being in the way as the Earth rotates around the sun and as the sun spins around itself and so on, one of these ejections is, I mean, it seems to me that it's quite small, because the sun is like somebody spinning around and around with a gun, and every now and then they shoot off a bullet, and it's just
exactly
lucky you happen to be in the way.
Yeah, exactly. We had one that happened in 2005, October, where solar mass ejection caused them to change and add two new classes, the X and M class, that was half the distance from the moon. And it was close enough that if it had been closer to Earth, it probably would have blown most of the satellites on that side facing it, because it only lasts a matter of seconds, right? And it would also cause major problems on the Earth in terms of radiation exposure and other problems. Yeah, the chances are very low, but the chances that the grid isn't going to survive from one or more solar mass ejections, and I'm not going to put a date of 2012 December, it's after that date where the risk increases further because the sun's not behaving normally because of these things like the alignment. And right now we're heading into this solar cooling period, but that's actually when you have more major solar storms and major solar mass ejections.
So really you're saying that as this solar instability and unpredictability increases, the odds become more likely that we're going to get in the way of one of these things.
Yeah, I have both from regular sources, from power corporations in America, and classified sources, as well as intuitive, that our biggest major single risk is two things. The magnetosphere collapse and reversal, which is going to occur over probably most likely somewhere around 30 days. It's going to take a period of time for it to evolve. And during that 30 days, we're basically naked from any solar activity, even minor sunspots. Yeah, if you have any major sunspots, even with those solar mass ejection, there's basically no protection against those sunspots hitting the Earth with an electromagnetic pulse, because ordinarily the magnetosphere would deflect those.
And we have heard similar things from our sources, too. I mean, this all fits together for a pretty sobering picture, because all of these things are happening.
Right, and so in other words, there's a period of time when there's a drop-off and increased, in other words, your shields are down like Star Trek. And even just a bad solar mass ejection or a lot of strange activity in the sun could cause, our power or grids or satellites to be knocked out. And then all commerce goes, international transport, movement of goods and services, our economy is based on computers. And most people aren't aware that, that the ICs in cars and all the kinds of electronic things are all based on this. So it would be like an electromagnetic pulse occurring in space, like a nuclear weapon going off over the U.S. at, say, 200 or 300 miles, could wipe out all the electronics in North America. Well, a similar thing could occur if there's just even a big sunspot during that 30 days where you go down the freeway to Los Angeles and all you see is egg-shaped cars all parked on the freeway because they can't drive anywhere because their integrated circuits are down fried.
Okay, but what about the super volcano in Yellowstone? And what about the increased volcanism and how that might change
it's increasing.
Of the planet?
It's increasing, and that's quite possible that we'll have those. I don't think the one in Montana is going to go. Actually, the most likely volcano, if you look worldwide, to go is the one in Ecuador. The one in Montana has already blown 500,000 years ago, and although it's bubbling, it's fully, in other words, it's responding with a change in the dome over the supervolcano, and it's rising. So in other words, like a balloon, it has lots of stretch. So all the work that I have and sources suggest if there's any kind of volcano that's going to blow its top, it's the one in Ecuador. And even if it did blow, as I say, it would put particulates up there, and the most likely thing it would induce would be a cooling effect on the Earth, which would further support the idea we're moving to an ice age. So with all these solar activities, we're going to end up with these events: overall cooling of the Earth, increased solar mass ejections, reversal of the magnetic field, a pole slide of the crust of the Earth, a change in the world geography. For example, between the Great Lakes and the Gulf of Mexico, there'll be a giant waterway that will be joined between the Great Lakes and the Gulf of Mexico. There'll be a rearrangement of the geography of Earth. Most of what we know as Antarctica will actually emerge from the South Polar Shelf. A lot of it will emerge and not be underneath what we call Antarctica anymore.
What are you saying is going to change? Are you saying the coastlines are going to change of various countries?
Yeah, I think the coastlines will change. I think that you'll see areas which will rise. The area of the Northeast, which is up around Massachusetts, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, that'll rise, and areas that will fall will be areas like Indonesia and Japan. You'll see massive destruction where those will literally disappear into the water. But I think overall you'll see the continents in Asia and Africa move northward, and you'll see North America and South America move southward, and Antarctica will emerge in the South Atlantic.
And that means that Europe would be moving northwest. Is that right?
It will move northwest, yeah. It will move out toward where Iceland is.
But is this something perceptual, or is this something happening over, I don't know, 10,000 years?
30 days.
Yeah, happens at walking
pace. It'll happen at a walking pace. It'll happen. It's not going to happen like, bam, the Earth is going to stop and the mountains are going to pile up. Those mountain-forming activities are things that do happen, but they're very rare and they require specific types of things to do that.
But walking pace is pretty fast, geologically speaking. It just doesn't make a good
geologically,
disaster,
really. Yeah. One point, the best way to look at it, and this is the numbers that I've come up with from all my work, is about 1.6 miles per hour for a 1,200-mile motion in 1 month.
I have to say that that fits. I mean, that kind of rings bells intuitively for me, for what it's worth.
We may have tsunamis and volcanism and other things that are dramatically going to increase. But we're not going to have a 3,000-meter super tsunami striking every continent. That's not going to occur.
What's interesting, of course, is that if one looks at the psychology of scaring the bejesus out of everyone with these movies that have been released and other people who, for whatever reasons, might be being encouraged to come out with all kinds of disaster scenarios, it's a little bit of a misdirect, because what's happening is pretty important, but actually it'll be...
Well, actually, it's worse in some ways. If you have this I know from marine bacteriology, if you have a 60% drop in the ozone layer for just 45 minutes, any grassy plants underneath that ozone hole and the phytoplankton in the upper 10 meters, which is a benthic layer that most of the phytoplankton grow in the oceans, that after 30 feet or 10 meters, they'll die, and you'll have a dinoflagellate and an algal bloom, which turn the oceans to look like blood, and the grassy plants, which include corn and wheat, et cetera, they die. So what I'm predicting is, in a way, worse, because if you're outside and you're exposed to these, number one, you're going to get a dose of radiation. You're going to get X-rays and cosmic rays. They're going to be relatively unshielded, although you can probably shield yourself pretty quickly by the right type of shielding in a safe room for a period of 30 days, because it's not going to last longer than that. The Hopi knows this, and other people know it. You have to be able to shield yourself from it for a period of time, which is why they went into caves. And they knew that the people that didn't go into the caves didn't make it. Firstly, because when you have high ultraviolet C, the first thing it does to you is it wipes out your lymphocytes. High ultraviolet C, when it goes and hits lymphocytes, your immune cells turn off and you can't fight infection, and you immediately die of sepsis within hours. Second thing is it will cause extreme burns. So they'll get blisters all over their body. And anyone exposed, of course, would develop cataracts and blindness. And any grassy plants, and, of course, a number of the trees in bloom would die. So a lot of the tree crops would die, depending on the area of the Earth exposed to this, before the ozone layer, which is a manifestation of the magnetosphere, repairs itself, which it'll do. But it's going to take probably weeks for it to completely reconstitute itself.
What should people do you recommend, who might be wanting to prepare for this kind of stuff? And it's not going to be like a disaster movie, but they're going to have to do something.
I don't think that going and building a little non-rideable boat is going to be. I think people need to have food and water and be able to self-quarantine themselves for a period of 30 to 60 days. I'd say 45 days. They need to be able to stay indoors in an area, maybe even just a room, that can block them from exposure to ultraviolet light and X-rays and significantly reduce cosmic rays. They need to have a capacity to have filtered air, food, and water, because maybe things burning in the ash and so on from volcanoes and the effect. You shouldn't try to fly during these times, because any jet aircraft going when there's a lot of volcanic ash will crash, and any vehicles trying to drive will be hit with electromagnetic pulses, so you can expect that your vehicle is not going to work. Even if you try to shield it, you're going to be dealing with all the other people that didn't shield their vehicles, so all the roadways will be jammed up, and unless you're off-road, you're not going anywhere.
And you won't be able to communicate with anybody, presumably, this time.
Regular communication will be gone. The only ones that will actually survive is what is classified, which are these fiber optic. They have special fiber optic lines that are actually part of the maglev tunnels connecting all the high-speed train systems all around the planet. And those are all those will still survive and be fully functional during this. Because the great earthquakes occur on surface level, they don't occur when you get down 4 to 5 miles down. It's only very, very high-level earthquakes that will affect those. So earthquakes are primarily a surface phenomenon rather than down around, say, 4,000 to 5,000 to 10,000 feet.
But many of the telecommunications trunks our fiber optic.
They're gone. Forget them. They're not going to be present. Yeah, they're going to be all gone.
Is it just going to physically break? Is it on the surface?
Well, what will happen is the grid system isn't going to survive it. Number one, you can expect the grids to be gone. You can expect transport to be gone. You can expect medical services to be gone. You can expect policing services to be gone. Yeah. So if you don't have little local autonomous, what I call cells of groups of homeowners, at least 6 to 10 adults that can protect themselves from violence and have food and water, and it doesn't need to be very long. You see, people are going to think that they should flee and head up to the mountains, and I think that's very wrong-headed, and it's going to result in a lot of people dying. Or trying to get into boats and float in the middle of the ocean and think that that's going to save them. Neither one of these things is going to be the thing. The thing that's going to affect people is to be able to have a place outside of larger cities where they know when they see the signs coming, because there's been lots of warning. Volcanism increasing around the world dramatically, major earthquakes. You're going to see strange activity in the sun. And if the governments are reporting the ultraviolet light, one of the best measures of the drop in the magnetosphere will be the ultraviolet light level. If you had an ultraviolet meter, say, outside your house, would be to see the ultraviolet light would be increasing. You may not see a difference in what your visible light, but the higher energy ultraviolet light will increase as the magnetosphere starts to collapse. And that'll be your warning sign as you see it drop a certain percentage to head for your safe room for the magnetic flux reversal.
When, Bill, do you see this happening in the near future?
I don't know the exact date, but I know that it's on or after 2012. It could be as late as 2019, but it's going to be, we'll have lots of advanced warning, in other words. It's not like it's just going to go bam and we're going to get left unawares. We're going to see volcanoes increasing all over the place. We're going to see strange climate changes because the volcanism under the oceans is increasing dramatically with a solar alignment with the center of the sun and the center of the galaxy, which will increase Earth's volcanism. Think of it this way. We have the black hole at the center of the galaxy sending out a plasma jet, literally with white holes reconstituting matter in their stars. The stars are like a gear system electromagnetically that are locked on like the gears to our Earth, and the magnetic flux fields of the Earth are interlocked with that. Okay? And so as the flow, like oceans and rivers of magma, flow in a specific direction, they create a flux field that is the polarity of our planet. So our planet is created by the polarity of the movement of a vortex in a specific direction of oceans of magma moving in a specific direction and a certain torus. That torus is going to change directions as we pass through the galactic plane. And as we do that, which happens every 3,600 some years, there are minor changes. And as we pass through it on specific alignments, those are greater, which is why it's three times that, or around 11,500 to 11,800 years, when we have a major collapse in the magnetosphere where there's a deposit of nanodiamonds on the Earth. Iridium, which is an interstellar mineral that's hundreds of thousands of times more common in space than it is on the planet. So you'll see a layer of iridium, and you'll see carbon. And you can see that in the geological record all over the Earth. Plus, you'll see these magnetic flux shifts, so that even if a volcano is releasing magma, the ferrite, or iron, in the deposits reverse polarity on that 11,500-800-year cycle. So you can see that over and over again through the Earth, that those patterns are recorded right in the rocks themselves.
But this is what
you can actually
Atlantis, see just going back into history and mythology.
Yeah, Atlantis happened. Let's put it this way. I'm going to make a statement. What happened to Atlantis will happen to Japan. They know this is part of their global consciousness. What happened, and I'm going to repeat that so people get it if they're listening in Japan, what happened to Atlantis will soon happen to Japan. But what happened to Atlantis also, portions of the Atlantean Empire, if you want to call it, were in the area of Antarctica. They had outposts all the way through the Atlantic and right down to Antarctica. The areas of that have fallen during the times of Atlantis, like off the northeastern United States and Canada, will rise. Also, other areas will change. The geography, there's a massive waterway that will open up between the Great Lakes and the Gulf of Mexico. And there's a number of intuitives that have seen this. Well, let's put it this way, I've been there. And I can tell you that the geography of the future North America is quite considerably different than what it is now.
Okay, so what are you seeing in regard to the geography of North America?
Well, part of the geography is that there are major changes in the in ocean levels, and in areas, there's inland waters in the areas of the western United States, so parts of the western United States are now peninsulas and islands.
So you agree, for example, California will be broken up?
Yeah, California and some areas will be broken up. They won't go under a giant tsunami, but there'll be changes in the geography. Some of them will become islands or peninsulas. And,
you're saying this is going to happen in a period of 30 days?
Yeah, it's going to happen relatively quickly.
Okay. With all of this in mind, coming in the future between now and what you say is maybe 2013.
Could be any time after that. I know it's something that's going to, it's something that is, let's put it this way, the Earth changes are tied directly to cycles that are solar cycles, galactic cycles, geological cycles, and the globalists know this. In fact, they've kept the ancient records like the books of Alexandria and Ashurbanipal and so on have all been collected and transferred through these libraries, and the most early conduit of those was through the libraries of the Vatican, through the Jesuits, and through all the global Illuminati.
Right. Well, that was
they know this
question.
They're all fully aware of this. So their scientists are aware, and that's why they've set up all these infrared satellites and imaging systems and so on, like the South Pole Telescope and their own imaging, because they're aware. And that's why they're also building underground cities at a feverish pace, because they want to have a golden ticket in case their first-level plans don't work so well.
Okay, but what about the discovery of the labyrinth in Egypt? Do you agree with Patrick Jarrell that there will be information in there from the Atlanteans warning about this?
Oh, I'm certain there will be some things like that. Although, remember, what happened at their time doesn't necessarily apply to what's going to happen now. You can actually go to geologists, and they'll tell you the position of the actual axial North Pole and where the pole moved. And we're talking about the physical axis of the Earth, not just the magnetic north. And that's a geological record that isn't disputed, because geologists can actually look at it. I talked to people, you know, I did oceanography research, and I talked to people who went back and forth in a ship called the Baffin with Woods Hole, Massachusetts, to the Baffin Island, which is an island that's the size of Australia. And you can go there and see petrified trees that are the size of the giant sequoias in California. You can go there and see the tusks of mammoth that lived in climates that were relatively moderate, like the prairies. So they pulled the bone. I actually had one of my friends actually pull these out of the permafrost up there and brought back pictures of these giant trees that were, you know, the size of, say, the redwood forest in California there. So the climate of Baffin Island at some future time, just like the climate off of Antarctica, indicates a subtropical forest that got suddenly frozen, and the way it got frozen was when the Earth changes occur, you can have a collapse of the upper troposphere, and the air as it descends cools like a supercooler, and it can hit the ground with winds at 200 to 400 miles an hour at minus 260 degrees, so it can cool a whole animal that's the size of an elephant in a matter of seconds and make them literally frozen in their tracks.
So like the classical discovery of that mammoth that had undigested buttercups in its stomach. It's
exactly, yeah. So in other words, they were literally
the collapse of the troposphere.
Yeah, all you need is a collapse of the troposphere that occurs, and you get a vortex wind that's very similar to the wind on the show The Day After Tomorrow, where it suddenly collapses, and as it collapses, as it approaches the Earth, it's, you know, you get these microburst temperatures drops where it drops hundreds of degrees. And then all of a sudden, as it hits the ground, not only at very high velocity, but incredibly cold temperatures, like literally dropping something into liquid nitrogen. It's like taking an elephant and dropping it into liquid nitrogen.
This gets flash frozen. Yeah.
With this in mind, that basically what you're talking about could result in an elimination of some of the population, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Well, if they don't start preparing right now, see, here's the things that could be done. We talked to Larry Joseph about this on my show. We should have surge protectors in all the power grids in the world. It would only take about 200 or 300 million investors to have surge protectors to stop a solar mass ejection or a sunspot during a time when the shields are down from blowing all our grids. Because if the grids go down, it literally could take years to build them back up again, especially if your industrial base is kind of screwed up afterwards. And so you don't want that, because if your grid goes down, we did a war game calculation at the Federal Center with Special Op Delta and FEMA years ago in the late 90s in Operation Top Off and Dark Winter and computer simulations, that the breakdown in social systems would cause more death than an airborne plague from violence and starvation, you know, because of in-time food distribution and production.
This is what people are wondering. Why is it the Illuminati are putting such effort into pushing a virus at this time if they know in less than 3 years, Earth changes will basically do the job for them?
No, and here's the reason. they are afraid that we'll interfere with their survival, because what they see coming to the Earth may be catastrophic enough they think that they won't survive unless they go underground. So to make certain that they don't chance it, they've got underground cities. They're building at the rate of 2 underground cities every 7 to 11 weeks in America.
Are they afraid the people on the surface will invade their underground cities?
Yes, or interfere with their air intake systems, or interfere, because most of these air intake systems are going to be in special military bases where they can surround them with their own people in the top to protect them so they can bring in resources from the surface when they want to. But they're safely in their underground, they call them hotels. So the real issue is they want to bring an airborne plague and a financial chaos and other things so they can control the population, not necessarily reduce them, because they know if ultimately if there is major chaos on the planet's surface, even if it's as bad as I say rather than Garrel, which is total annihilation, what I'm saying, the events that I'm talking about, for the prepared, they can survive this. If they're prepared to deal with radiation and food shortages and self-protection, it's very survivable. Most of the population aren't preparing. They think there aren't any earth changes occurring at all, which my version is considerably minimalist compared to, and it's based on classified and other sources, than Garrel or anyone else, including the 2012 movie that's out. But that alone, it still could wipe out 90% of the population of the planet if they're not prepared. Preparation could be just, you know, getting enough food aside so the population survive, having water aside, having surge protectors in your power lines, having every home having 60 days of food and water. Just 60 days. Doesn't even have to be a whole lot. Have a safe room that you can stay inside most of the time, especially during the day. At night you can come out, because when the sun's gone, you're not going to get bathed with at least solar radiation, but you'll have some cosmic and x-rays. You might be able to go out at nighttime if you have to go to that room to another room in your house to get things. And having things ready to deal with forest fires or gas line breaks or other things if there's earthquakes or other things happen. But the population's not preparing for any of these things. And as a result, I see a lot of chaos and destruction occurring because they're not listening to people like me that do know and have the sense to kind of amalgamate it all together into a synthetic picture that isn't so over the edge that there's no hope whatsoever except getting in a little boat and going out in the middle of the ocean that doesn't tip over, or trying to go to the top of the Andes Mountains and thinking there or the Pyrenees that you're going to survive.
One might be more vulnerable at a higher altitude anyway.
You will be more vulnerable because the temperatures are going to drop dramatically at those altitudes. You'll be frozen in the dark.
I'm curious what your answer is to how did the globalists or the military know that this stuff was going to happen as early as the 1950s, or maybe even earlier when they started building these underground bases? What was the inside story that they had on what was going to happen 50 or 60 years ahead? Do you know the answer to that?
Yeah, I can. Well, firstly, they used technology it was passed down through the ancient priest orders of ancient Atlantis, Sumer, Babylon, Egypt, etc. And in fact, they developed advanced technology that people might call the looking glass or other technologies. And they can look forward to see what timelines are and what timelines they can steer the population or the world toward. And they saw these events occurring. They looked at the ancient history and documents. They were able to pull up the documents that were pulled from the Schwabenland, which is in Antarctica. It was an ancient temple that they discovered down there. And they realized that events were going to culminate, and could well culminate, just like Patrick Garrel talks about this labyrinth. There's evidence all over the planet with underground cities. And I've had on my show, for example, Jonathan Gray, who's been to the underground cities that go thousands of miles through South America, Turkey, every continent, basically, giant underground cities. So ancient civilizations have risen to very high technology, built underground cities, and had tunnels going back tens of thousands of years ago. And just like the Hopis, we're at the end of the, if you want to call it, the fourth world. And this is not the first time that our civilization had risen and fallen, mostly by global catastrophes, but some of it certainly assisted at those times by human beings using advanced weapons of warfare at the same time. The globalists are basically trying to make sure they maintain control by being the masters of chaos before the chaos overtakes them, so they can hide and try to survive it and continue some semblance of continuity of civilization after it happens.
And presumably so plan B is to go off planet as well, because they've got the Mars base.
Well, they are already off planet. They have a city, a very large city on the moon. They've been there for since the early 1960s. They have a colony on Mars, and of course there was tons of evidence that there's previous human civilization on Mars a long time ago. So we've been off-world for a long time, but that alone wouldn't be sufficient because those populations are relatively small anyway. Without the umbilicus of being connected to a civilization on Earth that can supply all kinds of advanced technology and support, they probably wouldn't survive. In other words, if you're looking for 200, 300, or 1,000 years from now, if you only had a population on the Moon or on Mars, the likelihood of them surviving on their own without a connection to an advanced civilization on Earth is remote.
Okay, what about the Anunnaki that are supposedly not only a group of them maybe returning, there's a group here, and there are warring groups, and they are behind the scenes theoretically orchestrating events.
Well, I talked about this a bit before. Sometimes it'll more obtuse terms. You're right. There are warring groups, but rather than using a specific name that's familiar, like Zachariah Sitchin's terms, the Anunnaki, and others, where people think there's this giant planet going to come by, it's a dwarf star. What people have to understand is the best way to describe these, if you want to call beings, it would be almost use a biblical term of the Nephilim, or the fallen ones, the ones that came down from heaven. Just like the legends of Enki.
Yes, but there are a few groups. There's more than one group. So,
oh, yeah, there's more than one. There's millions, to be honest with you. But here's the situation. There's two basic groups. There's a group that basically understands the very nature of what they are as beings and the nature of the universe and the fact that the created universe itself is a manifestation, in a sense, that energy and mass and the very nature of our lower, if you want to call it dimensional realms, are a manifestation of what we call the true nature of consciousness. And that the rogue civilizations considers themselves the masters of this chaos, disconnected from that higher spiritual order, you know, the great consciousness, the one. Two groups, the primary, if you go through the histories of our civilizations, the Dogon tribe in Africa, the Naga in Indonesia, and all these other groups, you'll always see the issue of they talk about the serpent, the dragon. The reason is that they know that it came from the area of Orion, and a star that is called the Eye of the Dragon, which is Betelgeuse, and they look to a star called Alpha Draconis. There's a reason for it. In our local, if you want to call it parsect of space, this is the local, if you want to call it outpost, of the most evil of these characters and beings. And then there are also good ones. They've never really left, and neither of the evil ever really left. They're constantly steering our history and steering the nature of what it is to be mankind.
Right, but there's evidence of these civilizations and their impact on the Earth.
There's in every culture and every biblical tradition of every religion, of every culture. Of course,
right, but there's certain places on the Earth where it's more obvious than others. For example, in Iraq, and in Egypt.
Yeah.
I mean, you have evidence that's really sort of glaring and in your face, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt at all that in these places it's very, very clear. I mean, anybody who disputes it is just not, you know, wanting to know the truth, to be honest with you. The best way to find out the real truth is to look at all the anomalies you can't explain away and all the paradoxes, and then try to put together an Occam's razor explanation, then to go pray and then intuitively get a vision of what it is. Well, I know what it is. And the best way to describe it would be the fighting between the suns of light and darkness, or, you know, these ancient civilizations. And Earth is at the point where we're ready to advance from a zero-order culture to a first-order culture. And this will either be a delivery room or an abortuary for the living beings on this Earth.
Basically, the Illuminati are waiting for the return of what they call the king.
Well, it depends on which king you want.
This is a very evil individual.
Exactly.
And the trouble is, just because we're going down this road, it has to do with what is being orchestrated to happen on and around 2012, either by the Illuminati themselves on purpose, because it's not going to happen naturally.
In other words,
I want to go with this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're on the right track. In fact, the Earth changes, in a sense, are kind of a subtext for what's going on, and they seem like they're really important because we're very tied to things like food supplies and energy and other things. But in many ways, the spiritual events that are about to happen at 2012 and thereafter are much more significant. And you're right, the ultimate thing that they're looking for is the return of their feathered serpent god and the return of their king. You're right. Only it's a very evil king. That's what's happening.
Do you know, are you aware of the fact that, in other words, part of pushing war with Iran is in some way pushing Armageddon to happen, whether or not we want it to happen? In other words,
exactly.
It's exactly. It's kind of like performing a play for the masses.
Well, yeah, it is. It's actually a ceremonial ritual because, you see, people in our world, if you were to talk to a cartoon character that's just two-dimensional, it's written on a page, you couldn't conceive of a third or fourth or higher dimensions. Most people in the, quote, the mundane world, they can't conceive of higher dimensions unless you're a theoretical mathematician or astrophysicist like Einstein or one of these people that likes to deal with the polydimensions, at least on a theoretical level. And so they don't understand that the advanced beings, even us in, say, the distant future, the best way to describe us would be transdimensionals. It wouldn't be planetary this or that. It would be transdimensionals. We can leap across the galaxy, leap across time and space, and we're not limited by the speed of light because light itself is like a snail's pace across the galaxy. It's 100,000 light years. It's too far to travel in time, space, so it has to be in a higher dimensional plane. And so what we're dealing with is events that are occurring on a higher dimensional level, and they're, in a sense, the best way to describe it would be spiritual, because beyond the five dimensions, there's not four, five dimensions, and the fifth one is full to time space. So full to time space is the fifth dimension, which is what they talk about, wormholes and so on. That's actually the fifth. And the sixth to the dimensions and onward to the 12th, which are seven dimensions, or if you want to call hyperspace, or you may call it the spiritual space, but hyperspace would be a better descriptor. And you can describe these with advanced mathematics. And the quaternions of Maxwell are probably a better way to describe it than the equations of Einstein. You're trying to describe both quantum particles and large effects over galaxies and galaxy complexes in the universe.
So we have a whistleblower named Dr. Pete Peterson who does talk about Maxwell and how important some of his work.
Yeah, James Clerk Maxwell's equations were ignored by scientists and are still ignored. And his information, his equations, which were predated Einstein by, I think, 60 years, were considerably more accurate and more important than even the special and general theory of relativity.
So in your view, is there a way to prevent this play, this sort of apocalyptic display that the Illuminati are working towards?
Yes. Well, first off, as I mentioned before, which is very unique, there's movies out now like Encounters of the Fourth Kind and all this stuff. People need to know that abductions and so on are very real. And the best way to describe it would be almost like what I call a demonic possession. They're very real. They're very evil. And people want to dismiss it because it's so awful and so over the top that they can't think that a rational mind could think that an interaction like that with a negative being could really be happening. But the universe is both very good and very evil in it. And our creator God, and there is a God of the universe that's all-knowing. And in fact, we were, in a sense, an incarnation of that consciousness, is quite well aware of what's going on in our world. And there's an intervention that is conditional. And that intervention is conditional on the change of the heart of mankind. It is a sea change in a corporate behavior of how we as a population act. And it's almost like the last book of the Old Testament says, you know, that unless there's repentance, I shall come and strike the earth with a curse. So what's basically happening is mankind's behavior is denying the timeline where we can have an intervention. We have an intervention that can prevent us from the solar mass ejections and prevent us from major earth changes that will kill a good chunk of the world population. Because even if, in my estimation, the things happen, because of the unpreparedness of the population, probably 90% of them or more, 99% possibly, could be wiped out because they're not prepared for even having 60 days of food, protection from radiation, personal protection.
Right, but on a spiritual level, we're talking
on a spiritual level, it requires a change of attitude. We need to realize that it's like the symbols that were put before the United Nations buildings. It's a time to no more do war. It's a time to immediate total disarmament of not just nuclear weapons, but of chemical and biological weapons, scalar weapons, using Earth as a weapon of mass destruction against populations like the Sichuan, China, tectonic earthquake that was used with geotectonic harmonic weaponry to create a piezoelectric slip at the tectonic harmonic frequency levels.
Absolutely.
He's using weapons that were used at the time of Atlantis that was the reason why an intervention was not done at the time of the Atlanteans. And it's like in Circus Maximus, the thumbs were down and our planet was doomed.
When you're talking about an intervention, what you're really talking about is a change in consciousness on the Earth such that that the positive light beings, in essence, will assist us in reversing this trend. Isn't
exactly.
That
right? And they can completely truncate this disaster if there's a consciousness shift in mankind that they perceive. And I'm one of the witnesses down here actually monitoring it for them. And they are fully aware to the last iota of whether or not we're actually transforming our attitude toward war, pestilence, and even the third world. The spread of this plague and the way we handle it is also being monitored. The plans of proliferating weapon systems, the radicalization of Islam in any religion, the idea that we can allow the death of anyone because they're a different skin color, religion, sex, or sexual orientation is evil, and that we're being monitored. And the fact is that we're not doing very well. In fact, we're doing very badly. And so unless there's a major shift in the consciousness and the attitude of the population, I'm very spiritual, but like Yeshua HaMashiach, the Father in the flesh, I'm very much against religion. I think religion is a great poison on the earth. I think government, as it's been functioning, is very corrupt and evil. The corporations are the worst form of trying to create a non-living thing to have rights and capacities of a living thing. Therefore, it's a non-living thing that has rights and capacities of a living thing, so it's a good description of a zombie. So now we have these zombie corporations running the planet toward hell. It's all for a trans-dimensional sacrifice of the population of Earth to their astral Draco-reptilian gods, because that's what they're planning. They're planning on a major bloodbath and sacrifice of not only mankind, but all the ecosystems and all the living things on this Earth.
Okay, so I would like to talk a little bit about some of the plans for these. You know about Duncan O'Finian, and you know he's more or less was maybe the second wave of the super soldier program.
These super soldiers, there were many different waves. That's why I'm a little disturbed. I haven't seen the movie about the ministeric goats, but I'm very familiar with psionic warfare, and it's nothing to laugh at.
Well, absolutely. But we are getting information about a much more advanced form of robot. Have you also gotten that information?
Yeah. In fact, they're creating a super soldier cyborgs in an underground embryo lab just outside Beijing, China, for the world government. And they're, from what I hear, it's somewhere between 125 and 150,000 are currently being, how can I say, developed would be the best.
Okay, and are you saying that these are done with America and China on the same side?
Absolutely.
I see.
Yeah, in other words, all of the external dance of all these governments is all a lie for public consumption. They're moving toward a world government which is primarily controlled by the lettered agencies run the governments, and the governments are simply a skin or a shell for the real issue, which is the lettered agencies are controlled by these global elite.
Okay, and these cyborgs, what is this army of cyborgs? Is it going to be to control the population or to fight an interstellar war?
Either or both.
Is it possible that these cyborgs could be used for, in essence, a good purpose if we are indeed going to be invaded by, say, a race of reptilians and or other robotic races that perhaps are moving in on what we've heard are basically planetoids that are...
That's possible, but I don't think we need to necessarily have to develop our own force here. What we're dealing with is an intervention that's millions of years ahead of our culture, that we really don't have to do anything in order for us to be protected. We just have to have a sea change in the nature of what we are. We have to have not a physical change of our appearance, it's a complete change of our perspective of what it is to be a being on this planet and what it is to be a being in a collective of civilizations that understand the very nature of what it is to be and the very nature of the universe itself, which we are ignorant of. And I don't think that we necessarily have to develop our own force. I think what this force that's being developed is purely for evil. It's completely under control of the globalist elite. They're completely under the thumb of the dark side, if you want to call it, the Draco Reptilian.
Right.
Would be the term of the Nephilim. Some people use the word Anunnaki, whatever, but it's the dark side, and it's...
The trouble with the word Anunnaki is that it has more than... It has both positive and negative, whereas the...
I know. I don't like using that term. That's why. And
the Draco...
I think people need to understand there's both... Yeah, exactly. There are... I don't like to use the word alien either. The word alien to me shouldn't be even used.
Right.
The best way to use it would be the word, like the biblical term angels. There's good angels and bad angels. Angel means in Greek messenger. And that'd be a better term. And if you go back to the biblical terms, then it makes sense. You say, okay, now I know about the 200 that landed in Horeb, the transfer technology to mankind, and like Prometheus gave man fire. Well, you know, we've been transferred technologies that we shouldn't have, far more advanced than what people even know of. And many of these are for mind control and for evil and for warfare that are far beyond our civilization's emotional capacity and spiritual capacity to handle in a rational way. In other words, our civilization isn't prepared to deal with this. And, of course, I get challenged at times by people who say, well, I don't know about that, and that can't exist. I said, well, I'm sorry. Unless you're invited, you don't get access to this information. Even if you're a tenured professor, you have access to about 4% of the sum total of scientific knowledge in your area, or geopolitical or historical knowledge. That's why things like this material that Gerald's talking about in Egypt with the...
The labyrinths.
Labyrinth there. And there's lots of discoveries all over the world. They know that there were... When we invaded Iraq back in... we took what's called the Gate of Babylon, and we took all kinds of ancient documents and the Stargate, et cetera. I mean, they're fully aware of lots of things. Occultic level, that the population thinks it is all... woo-woo, Stargate, that sounds silly, that sci-fi channel, it doesn't exist.
That was actually right? A very substantial reason for invading Iraq, and the fact that they're not going to let it go anytime soon. Isn't that
right? Right, exactly. And of course, people have to understand also the 22nd Stargate is in Iran. It's the last one.
There's some interesting occult reason why they want to actually invade Iran, it seems to me, because there seems to be something to do with the fight between the various factions, if you will, of the Anunnaki that has to do
right.
with invading Iran. Can you talk about that at all?
Well, I think it comes down to this presence of the control of the territory. Just like it says in the Bible, the prince of Persia or the principality, the if you want to call it the astral being that exists over that territory, is the reason. There is the... it goes back to biblical principles. We're dealing with the earth, and this world is not just on a physical realm. There's a higher dimensional realm to the very nature of the structure of earth and its governance. And that's the reason why there is such a contention over Iran. Iran is the last territory that has to come under their domination.
The domination of what? Of the Illuminati?
Yeah.
Okay, but that would indicate that the people running Iran are actually of the light side. Is that true?
No, they're just of a different faction, if you want to call it.
Okay, do you want to get into any detail on that level?
Well, just like in Iraq, most people aren't even aware that there were kind of, if you want to call it, secret societies that knew about the gates and the other ancient documents in Babylon and Iraq. Well, the similar thing is going on in Iran. And if you look back in the history of these ancient roots of civilization, the primary contact with these advanced civilizations that brought things to our planet, transdimensionally, if you want to call it, just like the Bible said, just like the 200 landed on Mount Horeb, a lot of these early contacts that caused the rise of some of the early religions like Zoroastrianism, etc., were in Iran, were in the Great Valley there, and which is near Tehran. So these ancient civilizations had ways of communicating, how can I say it, with these entities and channeling information and maintaining contact and knowledge. And some of those contacts and knowledge were passed down through various organizations. Like in Britain, there were those that had passed down the Enochian knowledge through people like Mr. D, who is the one of the primary, if you want to call it, druidic wizards that, you know, helped the courts in the UK.
Right. So specifically, though, in Iran, what is it?
They have their own secret orders that have been, yeah, beyond Islam, there are other secret orders that are in Islam that have predated Islam and Judaism and that predate and are integrated into their, quote, religion. But similarly to the Druidic integration within Catholicism and Judaism and Islam. So in other words, there's a counterpart in Iran. Does that make sense? In other words, there's secret orders that understand things that are beyond the understanding of basic Islam.
Well, absolutely. But there has to be, in other words, to bring that branch, if you will, under their domain is the reason to invade Iran. I mean, in other words, there's some very specific issue, it seems to me, with the Iranian, Aryan Brotherhood. I don't know.
Well, I think if they know from the timeline that if Iran becomes peaceful and joins the West, it'll be the end to the timeline where the Earth can be annihilated, and the trip switch to bring about final Armageddon is the attack on Iran.
I see.
So if they can throw the switch by attacking Iran, they know that they will throw that we will enter the final battles that will be the dissolution of mankind and the ecosystems on this planet. And the timeline in which that doesn't occur is when there's a reconciliation with Iran, and when Iran is brought into the table of nations, and all nations are respected, and we do not make war or believe in extremist religions that believe that we should kill others that don't believe what we believe. But we all rise to a higher level of consciousness. And as I say, religion becomes dance and recipe cards rather than a recipe for murder on global scale.
Okay. I think on that note, we should end. Bill Diffel. I think, you know, I really appreciate your vast knowledge in all these different areas. And I think it is valuable to begin to bring these threads together, you know, into one, because I think people at this juncture really need to understand that there's a lot at stake and that we
should. Yeah, they're getting too fearful, and I'm worried that fear is rising in people's hearts. And if there's any one thing I want to say is do not fear, God is here. And he sent his emissaries, and he sent his beings, and he sent his interventions, but it requires a change not in our government, not in neglecting the right leader. It requires a change in us and our willingness to become a different type of being. And when we do, when we who are being watched become different beings, and it says, you know, repent. When we repent and become different, not necessarily what we do, but what we become different in our heart, our actions will follow our heart. Then our world will be intervened, and we will survive as a civilization that'll leap across the stars, live extended lives, and as it says in the Bible, be able to plant a tree and eat the fruit thereof and not be fearful of a nuclear war or a biological weapon or an invasion. We're living in a time now where unless the spirituality of mankind transcends its technology, we will be consumed by an evil that's galactic and cosmic, and it is here now and it is ready to destroy us.
Okay, thank you very much, Bill Diffel. From Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy, this is Project Camelot. And we will be in touch in the future.
Yep, and don't be fearful. As I say, study, pray, and take action, but just be a different person, and things will move forward as we do this collectively.
Absolutely. Well, Project Camelot is working in that direction every day.
Take care, and I appreciate everything you guys are doing, and take it seriously, people. You know, if you want to test it, after you study the issues, get in real quiet prayer and be still enough to hear that voice.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks very much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Blessings. Bye-bye.